listening to Spooky Show with your host, Kate.
Hey, folks at home, I'm going to open this episode by saying if you're listening to this on Thursday, April 28th, go to the Spooky Show page. Even if you're listening after, go give our lovely host, Kate, a wonderful birthday wish. She's Kate, and she's 20 great.
And for my birthday, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, please.
And forgive us for being late.
Yeah, I mean, we had a birthday party.
Hard for Kate's birthday on Saturday.
Yeah, but, you
I'm
know.
Like still a mess.
Me too. I'm really tired, but also sad to say we're really busy coming up too, but
we are going to get everything out.
We will prepare. You will get an episode a week.
I can
promise you that.
Now, when in that week? TBD.
And it'll be this way until probably the end of May.
Yeah.
But you will get an episode a week. I just can't promise on Mondays. So just keep checking back or follow the show on Instagram at Spooky Show Pod so you can keep up with when you can expect it.
Correct, it is.
And speaking of Instagram, this story we're talking about today was requested. The cats are in the closet. Okay, so like I was saying before the cats rudely interrupted, this story...
Apologize.
This story was requested on Instagram, and I never heard of it before, and it's really crazy, and it's basically like... the Australian Casey Anthony.
Ooh, so it's a real Casey Anthony. Or as they call it, Casey Anthony.
But this person was actually found guilty of murdering her child. Unlike Casey Anthony.
Well, that's a complicated case, correct?
I mean,
I guess. Isn't there like a whole other thing that like, didn't she just come out with a thing that was like, I was like getting raped by my dad and stuff
yeah,
like that? Yeah,
but... everyone that, says like, that isn't true.
Well.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay.
I'm not saying I don't know. But, yeah, it is complicated. And she did bring that up in court, too.
Hey, and she got acquitted, so theoretically.
It's just, will never understand how, and I say this all the time, how Scott Peterson is guilty and Casey Anthony is innocent. So. That's what I always say. But this one, I'm interested to see what everyone thinks, what you think, Harrison.
What will
too.
I think?
I don't know.
I'll never tell, actually.
Okay, so we're going to talk about...
I'll never tell.
A woman named Kelly Lane, and she was born on March 21st, 1975, to her parents, Sandra Lane, who was a former hospital worker at Manly Hospital. And Robert Lane, who was a retired police officer from the Manly Police Department, by the time this case took place, he was retired. He was also a retired rugby player and the local rugby coach. So he was like pretty well known around the area. It was kind of like a Friday Night Lights Coach Taylor situation.
Yes.
For her
as
dad.
We love around here.
We do.
Which we love.
So Kelly was born in Australia, and so like I said, the story takes place in Australia, specifically, it's another word, in the New South Wales area.
Okay.
And she attended school at McKellar Girls High School in Manly, where the family eventually moved
to. Manly, where the family.
Yeah, Manly, Australia, I guess. It's where the family like moved to eventually. Okay. And she has a brother who's also a rugby coach, like his father. And Kelly's mom actually played water polo, so Kelly got heavily into that. And her mother was like the team manager, the team mom of the water polo team or something. So like, they're sporty. They're a sporty little family.
It's just a sporty little thing.
And the family wasn't exactly like well off or insanely wealthy, but they were
just kind of regular middle class family.
Yeah, and they were very like respected in the area. While Kelly's brother is known as the star rugby player around the time, she kind of wants to be known as like the star water polo player.
Okay.
But But in the year 1992, Kelly became pregnant at age 17. So she goes to her boyfriend at the time. His name is Aaron. And according to him, he said that they weren't ready to have a child and that they were too young. So Kelly decides to have her first abortion.
Okay.
17 in 1992.
All right. Abortion number one, 17. Gotcha. You said first.
Yeah.
Which is what makes me nervous about where this may be going.
This is going to be going in a lot of crazy places.
Where this may be going.
So according to Aaron, she was upset about getting this abortion, but she was able to kind of like, you know, heal and like move past it. But then in 1994, at the age of 19, she became pregnant again. But this time, she didn't tell her boyfriend that she was pregnant, and she kept it to herself. Like, she didn't tell anybody that she was pregnant.
Not even her boyfriend?
No, she didn't tell anyone. Her boyfriend, her family, she kept this a secret. So she went to the clinic by herself in order to have an abortion again. But this time she's much further along. She's at 20 weeks.
Oh.
So they let her know, like, where she lives, she's legally allowed to make her choice to have the abortion. So she does, but because she's 20 weeks along, like, this procedure was more intense. It was more like a surgery. And they didn't provide her with any counseling or anything after. So, moving on, she graduated high school at this point. She's now enrolled at university with an arts degree at the University of Newcastle, but she eventually drops out to study at the Australian College of Physical Education while working part-time at Ravenswood School for Girls as a water polo coach.
Okay.
Yeah. And apparently, like, that second abortion was really, like, brutal. Like I said, it was like a surgery, so that one she took a little harder. And
yeah, you know, I mean, she's farther along.
Yeah,
pretty significantly farther along.
Yeah. So you will also see everywhere in headlines that the media like really loves to say she was undoubtedly like going to go to the Olympics and that she was an Olympic level water polo player. But that wasn't necessarily true. Like, the media like to say that, like, oh, she wanted to go to the Olympics, so she's, like, you know, giving up all these babies and, you know, stuff like that. But, like, she definitely wanted to coach and, like, play water polo, but she didn't have the desire anymore at this point to be a star athlete. Like,
she was trying to kind of focus more on, like, her own life.
Yeah, she wanted to actually be a teacher.
Yeah.
And get married and raise a family, like, for real, when at an age where she feels that she could do it her best.
Right.
Where she feels personally she could do it her best. And, like, it wasn't really in...
It's also in Australia.
Yeah.
It was completely different, you know.
And it wasn't really, like, a... The Olympics thing is a little exacerbated, I think. And I think a headline like, you know, Olympic-level water polo player charged with murder, you know, kind of just grabs
Oh, and it's also just
attention.
Like, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
That is, like, typical media manipulation.
Right. Yeah. So anyway, 1995, at the age of 20, she gives birth this time. This is a year after that abortion. She gives birth this time to her first child, and it was a girl she gave birth to. We don't know the name of this girl. We're just going to say girl. And
girl.
This pregnancy.
Hello, girl.
This pregnancy was 100% hidden.
From the person who had helped conceive the child. Okay. Important note, I believe.
And we don't know why she didn't decide to get an abortion this time. Maybe, like, because that last one was kind of traumatic. But she carried this child to term, decided to give it up for adoption without anybody knowing.
Okay.
Like, her boyfriend, family, friends, no one. And she's still living with her parents, and she hid it the whole time.
Jeez.
Yeah. And even crazier, she's playing water polo the whole time, too. Like, how?
Yeah.
And she also even competed in the grand final water polo championships the day she gave birth. And it's crazy because you're in, like, these tight bathing suits.
Wait, that's actually, like, in absolute insane.
Yeah, I know. So according to one of her coaches, she did see her get into the pool one day and she noticed her stomach was like looking pretty big. And another player said she noticed it too, but like nobody said anything to Kelly.
Right.
It's kind of also like, what do you say?
Yeah. Are you pregnant?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And also it's not a good look like to be like to your water polo teammate either, being like, you look out of shape or like you look
right.
sick, you know, it's like reflects bad on the team too.
So the people around her, like, they had inklings, I guess, but she wasn't talking about it, and she was still playing water polo, so no one thought, like, no one brought it up. And since the trial of the child we're going to talk about didn't take place until 2010, and we're in 1995 okay. now, in this story, like, they're all kind of, like, recalling this and thinking she was pregnant at the championship but not saying anything. Like, they're like, I think I thought she
right.
was. So they lose the championship and they go out to a pub. And at around 9 p.m., the team realizes that Kelly has left. And they all even joked saying, like, oh, my God, she's having the baby. Like, making light of it. So they all decided to call around to local hospitals and ask everyone who picked up, like, did Kelly Lane have a baby? And finally, one hospital was like, yeah, she had a baby. But nobody went there to check on her. Nobody called her. And nobody ever brought it up again. So weird. So
it's like just true. This is, yeah, okay.
Yeah, so.
I also didn't know that kind of stuff happens. Like that people, that like records and stuff like that will just. Shoop.
Yeah. Well, so Kelly herself said that. That made her feel, like, pretty crappy because she had a feeling everyone knew, but nobody asked her. So, like, at that point, she didn't want to tell anyone, and she kind of just went through it alone. I think she was kind of in, like, a, you know, well, no one noticed or no one said anything to me, so I'm just going to do this thing by myself. And according to Kelly and the hospital records, she delivered the baby at the hospital. She was there for 2 days. But she's able to get a day pass the day after she gave birth and checks herself out for the day, leaving the baby there and goes out to celebrate her birthday because it's her birthday. And then she returns back to the hospital. So, like, she shows up to her birthday party. No one knows she's just given birth or anything. And then she goes back to the hospital.
Jesus.
So then she...
Yeah, okay, let me just play my quick game and then I'll yeah. be out of here.
So then she completes the adoption for this baby girl. According to those records, the adoption was very difficult for her because, like, she breastfed the child. She met the parents, the whole thing. It wasn't easy, but she did it. And once again, she just had to move forward with her life and accept the decision that she made. So the next year, in 1996... she finished college and went on to secure a position as water polo coach at Ravenswood, where she was working part-time. And her credentials are listed in the school yearbook as a degree-qualified teacher with honors. And then on September 12th of that same year, she gave birth again.
When is she popping out babies like this and nobody knows? Yep. Do they know about this one?
So, okay, this is kind of who the story is about. So she gave birth to another baby girl, and this is Tegan Lane, who this is
okay.
case is about why she got charged for murdering her baby. Let's get into this. So Tegan Lane, she's delivered on September 12th, 1996 at the hospital. Her mother, Kelly Lane, is with her at the hospital for 2 days, nursing her and taking care of her. And according to hospital records, there was no attempt or mention of putting the baby up for adoption. She listed the child as being on her medical insurance, and she said she's going to be taking the child home with her.
Uh-huh. For the first time.
Yeah.
And what does the hospital say in regard to this?
What do you mean?
Nothing? Did the hospital's like, not like... this is weird that now you've like come in here multiple times. What? I guess not. No.
Yeah. Why would they be like?
It's just weird because it's interpersonally, you know.
Yeah, but like, if she wants to keep her baby this time, she can keep her baby.
I know. I guess it's just more like, I guess because it's in the context of listening to it like this, yeah, that I'm like, well, what about this? Well, what about this?
Yeah. So she leaves the hospital with Tegan on September 14th at around 11 a.m., 11 to 12. And by 3 p.m., Kelly arrived at her parents' house alone.
Okay.
So a few hours later, she then attended a friend's wedding dressed in white with her boyfriend.
Uh-huh.
And Tegan Lane is never seen or mentioned again.
What?
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah. So we'll come back to all this, but I'm going to go through the rest of, like, the pregnancies and the stories because, yeah, there's more. So with Tegan, once again, nobody knows what happened. When she was pregnant with Tegan, nobody knew. So nobody even knew she really existed except the hospital. You know, so then in 1999, Kelly Lane gave birth to a baby boy. And it's reported that while she was 25 weeks pregnant with him, she did attempt to get an abortion, but 25 weeks was actually too far along. So she had to go through with giving birth to this baby boy. So she does it and puts this baby up for adoption.
Okay.
So during this time, she's still living with her parents, and she's also living with her boyfriend, Duncan, who she's with for a while, but their relationship isn't really that serious. Like, he plays rugby, she plays water polo, and lives with her parents. And sometimes she stays over at his place, but they're not really seeing each other constantly. But either way, he never noticed she was pregnant with this baby boy.
What?
So, like I said, she gave birth to this baby boy in February 1999.
Yeah, they're obviously casual if he doesn't even notice that she... Again, like, how
I mean,
is,
her parents
how is
didn't
she
notice.
Showing? Like, how is she carrying and, like, barely showing? Like,
it happens to some people. Some
I know
people don't
know
they're
some
pregnant.
Some people don't even know they're pregnant. I know.
Yeah.
I know.
I think it's just how your...
How
some
your
people's
body
bobbies.
Carries it.
Yeah.
Yeah. How your bobby carries it.
I know, it's a bobby.
How your bobby carries it.
Yeah. So, she gives birth to this baby boy. She's now 23 years old. She was 21 when she gave birth to Tegan. And for this baby boy, she starts to fill out the paperwork for the adoption, and she finds herself in a bit of trouble. Because technically what she's doing is perjury, because for that first baby girl she put up for adoption and for this baby boy, she's not putting her real home address on these forms.
What is she writing?
Anything. A different home, a different address. She's not writing the name of the real father, because, like, then she couldn't keep any of this hidden anymore. Like, she's making things up. So she's putting down, like, whatever she wants in order, you know, just to, like, get the paperwork done. But this is adoption number 2. I have 3 here, but I'm pretty sure we only said 2. She had...
No.
3? I think it's 2. And I think... Questions, like you said, what?
No, this was the third one.
The third adoption?
Oh, no, no, no. Okay,
yeah, it's the second adoption. So I think questions are starting to get a little
raised. Good.
The social worker is trying to complete and finalize the adoption of this baby boy. And the way it works is that, like, in the hospital, you fill out this paperwork that's considered temporary, and it's going to give the state or the country, like Australia, I don't know, or whatever, like, the responsibility for this child for a set period of time. So in this case, the state takes the baby and they say, like, we'll take care of the baby in foster care for 30 days, and you need to come in during that period of time and complete the paperwork. That way we can verify the validity of this adoption before we make it permanent.
Yeah, so, and so that she doesn't come back and be like, that's my baby, you stole my baby. You know, they got to get all the paperwork right.
Yeah. So this child is going to be placed in temporary care before it can be considered for permanent care. So since Kelly is, in fact, not doing the paperwork, the child goes into temporary care for 30 days and then has to be moved into legitimate, like, social services, like, under the care of social services. So the social worker is really hounding Kelly, saying, like, you need to get down here and do this paperwork. This child needs to be able to, like, get the opportunity
to have a life.
To be adopted, yeah.
Right.
But eventually, this case gets sent over to another social worker by the name of John, who takes a look at the paperwork and decides that something is definitely not right. So she's going through the same.
Oh, no.
She's going through. And when she does this, she's going through the same adoption agency she did with, like, her first child. So they're like, what happened to that first child, that baby girl you put up for adoption? And she's basically like, what? I don't have another child. But, like, what happened to Tegan, though? Meanwhile, this is the adoption agency that did the paperwork for that first child she put up for adoption.
So she's just, like, in here lying?
Yeah. She used the same adoption agency, and she's kind of, like,
that's off the denying. Chains.
Yeah. So.
And then what?
No. Okay. So John and social services, they're calling the hospitals, just trying to get more information about the first baby she put up for adoption and the other, like, you know, everything. And when they call the hospital says, okay, are you talking about the child born in 1995 or the child born in 1996? The one in 1995 was put up for adoption. Yeah. 96 is Tegan.
Correct.
And they're basically like, what? There was a baby born in 1996? And the hospital confirms, like, yeah, there was. Tegan Lane was born to Kelly Lane in 1996. So she went through that adoption of the baby girl in 1995, had Tegan, and is trying to go through another adoption with this baby boy. And when they ask Kelly where Tegan is, like, the social services people are like, wait, you had another child? Like, where'd it go? Because, like, you didn't give it up for adoption. Kelly's like, I don't have Tegan. What Tegan? And that's when they're like, okay, something's definitely
something
not right.
Definitely amiss.
And it gets reported to the police department now. And it's filed as a missing persons report. And there's a couple of weird theories on what happened here. Like, apparently there was a detective who was given the case who just, like, couldn't care less about this story. And
I mean,
like,
classic.
Yeah, didn't investigate or do anything with it. And some people speculate it's because Kelly's father was a retired police officer. So he knew this officer. This detective says he didn't know him that well. And I don't know. It's also speculated that sweeping this case kind of under the rug was because at the time, this particular police station was under a mass investigation. And the detective wasn't involved in it, but apparently there was, like, a lot of mass corruption and conspiracy going on at this particular office. And it even got shut down and searched for a bit. So officers were fired and stuff. So, like, it kind of just seemed that they assumed there was no missing child and it was just a paperwork error. So they didn't put any time into it. There was a lot going on.
Yeah, obviously, one could say.
So social services continued to press them, insisting it's not a paperwork error. And now it was 1999 when this first missing persons report was filed. And it was December 2000. When Kelly first went into the police department to actually get interviewed. So it was quite some time.
Wow.
So at that time, she was 7 months pregnant. Apparently, she had rekindled a relationship with her boyfriend from high school or early childhood or something, which we'll get into later. But apparently, she wants to actually keep this pregnancy. She pretends to all her friends and family that this is her first ever pregnancy. Like, posting, or they didn't have posting back then, but, like,
but being
the
public
equivalent,
about announcing it.
Yeah, the equivalent of, like, this is my first child and telling the world. She does have this child, a baby girl, and she's being raised by, like, her family, staying out of the limelight, so she's all good. So now she's getting interviewed at the police station in December 2000, and the police are asking her where Tegan is. And she tells them that she had given the child to the father in Perth. His name was Andrew Morris, with an M. And you can find him and verify that he has Tegan. And that's it. So police bring her back in. And that's when they tell her that they've looked everywhere. And they can't find Andrew Morris anywhere. And Kelly responds in this, like, really confused way. And she's like, wait. Start over. His name isn't Andrew Morris. It's Andrew Norris with an N.
What? No.
She's
no,
like, I'm
no,
sorry.
No, no.
I got confused.
Cap.
Yeah, she's like, so sorry. I got confused. So to this day, she claims she's not 100% sure of Andrew's last name. So from here, Kelly starts to tell her version of the full story, which is that on the day that Kelly gave birth at the hospital, she had contacted Andrew and let him know. So Andrew was apparently someone that she had an affair with for a while and who she met at a bar. And she says he knew she was pregnant. And then the two of them agreed she wasn't really ready to raise a child. But like I said, this was an affair because apparently, and according to Kelly, Andrew had a partner by the name of Mel or Melanie, and Andrew and Mel wanted to like raise that child together. And Kelly said like she didn't really have another choice except to put her up for adoption. And since the birth father really wanted the child, that he could just take her, apparently his partner, who he was cheating on, was totally okay with it and was like, I'll raise the child with you. So, according to Kelly, she called him when she was at the hospital giving birth, and he came and met the child, and he met her in the foyer of the hospital when she was checking out, and she handed the child to him and Mel and Andrew's mother. So according to Kelly, because his mother was there, she was even more comfortable with this and thought it was okay to just give her baby to this man she was having an affair with, and, you know, she felt okay about it. But remember what I said earlier, she put this child under her health care. She put Tegan under her health care while at the hospital, and she didn't tell anyone about her. So I don't know. Is the story true?
Yeah.
So police do a manhunt for Andrew Norris and can't find him anywhere. They go to the apartment where she said he lived, and he's nowhere to be found. They can't even find records of him, and they ask neighbors at that apartment complex about him. And basically, like, during the trial and everything, the prosecution is like, we searched everywhere for this guy and for Tegan and Mel and this guy's mom, and they don't exist.
Jeez.
And Tegan is not out there. Like, we don't know where she is. So in June of 2005, the coroner eventually decided to order an inquest, and in February 2006, the coroner ruled that Tegan Lane must be dead at this point. Based on the fact that there is absolutely not one shred of evidence that she's existing anywhere outside of those 2 days at the hospital, there are no records of her anywhere, so that means Kelly must have done something to her, right? Like,
yeah.
What else is there? Police verified she did not give her away, like up for adoption, and they even offered Kelly full immunity for everything except for murder if Kelly just told them where Tegan was. And Kelly just kept saying, I'm not going to say I did something I didn't do. I gave her to her father. So police investigators ultimately decided they had no conclusive or physical evidence that Kelly did something to Tegan. So they decided not to charge her. However, they referred the matter to the NSW, New South Wales Director of Public Prosecutions, or the DPP, Nicholas Crowdery, on November 17th, 1999. And the DPP charged Kelly with the murder of her daughter. So Kelly pleaded not guilty, and the case went to trial by jury. The trial began on August 9th, 2010, which is wild how long this took. And of course, the prosecution brought up all the babies and the abortions and the adoptions she's had throughout the years and claimed she kept all her pregnancies secret to protect her image. And apparently she really was just sleeping around with a bunch of rugby players that her dad coached. And
jeez, and she was getting pregnant by all of them.
That's what the prosecution is saying. They're basically
This is a they're basically using harlot defense.
Yeah, well, like not a defense. Yeah, like they're kind of pulling out all the stops. Like they pulled out like that she wanted to play water polo and like she didn't tell anyone and she was sleeping around and she had to do that. She had to keep it secret and get rid of all these children to protect her image and her reputation. So the prosecution and police argue that they searched everywhere for this Andrew guy and Tegan, but apparently apparently, and we know this now, not all records were searched.
Okay.
There's still the possibility that Andrew took Tegan and moved out of the country because, like, how would they know? So some people believe they didn't actually do, like, a full-on manhunt. And yes, this was publicized on the news. So it's like, you know, maybe Andrew would have came forward if he saw it. But one of the other guys who fathered Kelly's children said he had no idea this was going on and never saw anything about it during the time this was all taking place. So, I mean, it's possible. So even investigation teams who were on this case later said they never officially cleared all of these lists of possibilities of children. But this was, kind of later brought up. So during the trial, the prosecution, while it was happening, would continue to clear list while the trial was going on. And when I say clear, it's like, okay, one list would be babies born in September 1996 enrolled in school. Okay, no Tegan found. And there's so many other, like, possible combinations.
Yeah.
To, like, searching for a child. Like, you know, okay, babies born in 1996, like, I don't know what else you could put
doctor's
in, but like,
records.
Yeah, it's like so much.
Yeah,
to
that's
look
really
for.
Crazy.
So they would like they're doing. They didn't have enough time to do it before the trial, I guess, and they're doing it while it's
what
going
the
on.
Hell?
So the prosecution would clear a list, and then the defense would have to verify it and run through the names as well. But the prosecution was the entire like country of Australia or whatever it is in Australia, and the defense was like, you know, a lawyer. Or two.
Yeah.
So the defense was so overwhelmed.
I mean, the weight of the state is always going to be crushing.
Exactly. Yeah. So the defense was very overwhelmed with how much research the prosecution is like still doing while in trial, while still pushing that while still like trying to argue that everything is verified and they did this big manhunt, you know? So that's where it's a little like iffy for me.
Right.
But now
I get that.
Yeah. But now people are saying, no, it wasn't done. Like, it wasn't a manhunt. I don't know. Anyway, the prosecution takes a big leap on the theory that Kelly was prepared to abandon her children at birth to increase her chances of representing Australia at the Sydney 2000 Olympic Games for water polo, and that she also believed children would interfere with her education plans, her social life, and in the regard in which she was held by friends and her parents. So on December 13th, 2010, literally 6 months later, the trial took place for 6 months. The jury found Kelly guilty of lying under oath in relation to documents dealing with her adopting two other babies.
Oh.
Which is true.
Uh-huh.
Because she lied on
those.
Yeah,
of course.
The jury... No, this is crazy. So the jury was not able to come to a unanimous verdict on the murder.
However,
Judge Anthony Wheelie advised the jury and gave them the option of returning a majority of 11-1 verdict.
Okay.
So basically, he said like, oh, majority of you believe she did it, though.
Damn.
So a little later, on the same day, Kelly was found guilty of murder of Tegan and refused bail. I didn't know. Can you allow that?
I didn't.
I thought it had to be unanimous.
Yeah. I mean, that might be different laws. They might have majority.
That's crazy.
Yeah. I don't know the ins and outs of the.
Yeah.
The legal system there. But like, I know that may be a unique feature of the American.
So rough, though. Like being like, oh, you're not getting the murder charge. Wait, just kidding.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very fucked up.
So on April 15th, 2011, Kelly was sentenced to 18 years in jail with a non-parole period of 13 years and 5 months. She will be eligible for parole on May 12th, 2024. And she did try to appeal multiple times and was rejected. And it's pretty wild how, like, she's guilty and Casey Anthony isn't. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Because, like, I mean, it's kind of obvious, I guess.
Yeah.
that she did do something to Tegan.
Yeah, I mean, she was the last person to see her, and she is the parent who is responsible for the baby.
And she is seen leaving the hospital with her, and then arriving at her parents' home 2 hours later alone and never bringing her up or telling anyone that she existed. But I don't think there's, like, nearly enough evidence as there is in Casey. I don't know. Uh-huh. There still isn't, like, there isn't any physical evidence, I guess. It's wild. It's a wild story.
It's just, to me, it's just, like, again, another example of, like, so many instances where it's, like, how the fuck, like, does this happen?
I don't know.
How does, like, a baby just up and disappear? Like, how does this, like, how are there no systems in place? Like, how are there no, I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong, but, like, part of me feels like the U.S. system, they check in on you after.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, there's mechanisms with which these kind of things are not happening that often. But, again, maybe this is just a one-off case, and I'm like, what the fuck?
Well, I mean, everything before this was fine.
Yeah.
Her two abortions, fine. Giving up a child for adoption, fine.
Yeah.
But it's like this.
It's just like Tegan, maybe there needs to be, like, I don't know, more things in place to help protect kids after they leave, you know, make sure that they're, like, protected. You know, I know Child Protective Services and stuff exist.
Leave with their parents?
Well, yeah, I mean, you can't assume that all parents are going to be, like, 100% able to, like, take care of a kid or, like,
yeah,
help. I mean, that's why things like Child Protective Services exist, you know. I mean, and again, not to say, like, that we shouldn't be giving parents the benefit of the doubt, but, like, you know, this person, there's a million warning signs with this person. They lied and through multiple pregnancies. They, like,
yeah, the hospital didn't know that. No one knew
of
that.
Of course. But yeah, again, I mean, I guess this may be an unavoidable case,
and
cancel,
I mean,
me in the comments.
Also, because, like, she literally, if she's seen leaving with Tegan and arriving home 2 hours later, she did it immediately. Like,
yeah,
there
was
no,
like, peace out.
There was no, like, stopping
so
that.
So sad. It's, like, evil.
I really wonder, but what if Tegan is with the father?
But they can't find the existence of the father,
but
correct?
I mean, it's very likely, because I know, I read that most of these children had different fathers. It could be likely that she doesn't know his name.
True.
Like, it really could.
True, she could be, like, off about, like, where she, you know, like, what she thought the name was.
Yeah.
And then be, like, completely off base. Like, not even in the ballpark.
I know. It's a possibility, I guess. And that's why they can't. I mean, it's kind of bizarre that they can't find Tegan, I guess. But also, they might not even know her last name.
Right.
Like, it's, yeah. So, I don't know. This one is
weird. Thanks for the submission, folks. This was definitely an interesting one.
Definitely a conversation starter for sure. Let me know what you think. There wasn't a ton of information out there on this, so if I missed anything, let me know. And there was also a lot of, like, conflicting information too about the pregnancies in particular, so I hope I got the version right. I did a lot of research. I also read she was pregnant, like, maybe 7 times, and I don't think I talked about 7 pregnancies, so I don't know.
Damn.
Yeah. And only
damn.
I know. Okay. Well,
folks, thanks for joining us.
We set our spiel at the top about following and rating the show. So
that's
we'll
right.
We'll just leave you.
Have the best.
Harrison, you can't
birthday
do
week of your entire life, Kate. And
thanks. Have the best week of your entire life. Goodbye.